Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason, and this is Josh Nason's Punch-Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. It is good to be back. Been a little bit, but I am excited to bring you this episode because we're going on a little road trip. Yeah, you and I, we're going on a road trip. We're going to go to the Pacific Northwest of this here United States to Seattle, Washington, and a little bit of Portland, Oregon, too. We'll get into that in the show. We're going to go inside, I guess, the making, the existence of, or whatever you want to call it, the supernova that is Defy Wrestling. Yes, that's right. Defy Wrestling, based out of Seattle, Washington, as well as doing a show in Portland, Oregon, coming up this Saturday, the 26th, as we talk here in March. And I've been fascinated by this group for a long time, not just because of Brian Alvarez and his coterie of ne'er-do-wells, including the good brother, Craig Proper, and Double V, Vince Verhey. But because when you hear about an indie group that has this much buzz, you're kind of interested in what's going on. And I kind of did a little bit more research on my own. And I'm like, huh, I know this guy that happens to co-own this promotion, that being Matt Farmer. So Matt and I talked almost an hour about Defy, and really just as a good to great conversation, I would say, if you're just interested in hearing about kind of how indie wrestling works and the decisions to go from using just local talent to when do you bring in national talent, what's the right mix, streaming versus this service and all this stuff. We talk about Nick Wayne, Darby Allin, Swerve Strickland. I mean, this promotion just celebrated its fifth anniversary, and again is heading into some big things. Jon Moxley just got announced. So yeah, this is a really fun conversation all about Defy Wrestling and about how this promotion that started just 5 years ago is poised for some pretty big things coming up in the year ahead. And yeah, so let's get to that right now. Myself and Matt Farmer, co-owner of Defy Wrestling, also wrestling historian, friend of the website, all that good stuff. Coming up right now. This is a podcast I've wanted to do for quite a long time. I know you people have heard me say this before, a while ago I did a... I was really kind of fascinated with looking at different indie promotions around the country. And of course, I was going to kind of do this series of talking to different groups, and then the pandemic hits. all the indies kind of shut down. But however, I want to pick this back up again, and no better place to resume than with the one and only Defy Wrestling, a promotion you've heard a lot about, of course, on this website a lot because of our own Brian Alvarez has managed to sneak his way into some shows. Hope he should be paying triple the price of a ticket, to be quite honest. But he sneaks his way into shows. And of course, talk about Nick Wayne, talk about how great these shows are. So I figured let's go to one of the guys that helped start this company himself. The co-owner of Defy and someone that has, again, been on these airwaves before in Wrestling Observer Radio, Matt Farmer, is here for the very first time. And Matt will do the official podcast thing of welcoming to the show and tell good people hello. How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing great, Josh. Thank you for having me so much. Yeah, Brian does sneak his way in sometimes. No, he's on the guest list for sure. But, I've known Brian for, almost 30 years now. So he's kind of like earned those. He's taken enough of my chops and stuff to have earned the ability to sneak into a lot of these cards.
Unbelievable. I hope he's not taking away like a VIP seat at ringside or anything like that.
No.
Good. Because you know what happens?
No, I make him stand. He does not get a chair. He has to stand.
Does he have to stand on a chair in order to see?
He does, yeah. Sometimes he will actually sit on Craig Proper's shoulders.
Oh, okay, good.
So he could see, but, because Brian's small. No, but it's great having them out. It's great having Vince Verhey out too. And, Vinny and Craig come out a lot, and it's always great to see those guys as well.
So, the first time that I had ever heard your name, and this is going to sound weird to begin with, but then it'll actually make sense. So the first time I ever heard your name was on edition of Wrestling Observer Radio. And I was immediately annoyed, not at your voice, but because Brian, so you came on years ago to talk. It was during Hall of Fame season Wrestling Observer Hall of Fame season. I can't remember who you came on to kind of talk about, but I was annoyed because Brian just said, Matt Farmer's here, and he just kind of starts going into it and doesn't explain who you are, how he knows you, why any of us should know you. It was like this, I was like, who is this person? I have no idea. And I remember telling him afterwards, like, dude, you got to explain who some of these people are. And then we get to know you're into history. You do very well versed in wrestling history. And now obviously with Defy and everything else. So yeah, the first time I heard you, I'm like, who is this guy? And now all these years later, here you are. Look at that. I love it.
Gosh, Brian, geez, we got to tell him how to do his job all the time.
Oh boy. It's a daily thing. Daily thing. My texts are always blowing up to him. But enough about Brian Alvarez. Yeah, go. Say something else about Brian. Absolutely.
No, he's a good guy, honestly.
Yeah.
Those Hall of Fame discussions, I always really enjoyed those. It's interesting because I started doing a lot of those shows with Dave, and Dave and I have a lot of similar opinions about history and Hall of Fame and their worthiness. But there were still times where we were like, wait a second, this doesn't I don't agree with this guy on this one. So it was always fun to discuss those with him.
Yeah, it's good. I love when, and we don't have that a lot on, whoever is on Observer Radio, maybe just because the way it is or what have you. I enjoy when there are debates and when Dave and Brian don't agree or we have a guest on and they don't agree. Because it's not like I think so many people now, because the way like the political climate is and just how like sports media has turned into that. You know, it's everyone assumed like a disagreement's going to turn out to be like, you know, Stephen A. Smith and Skip Bayless, you know, yelling at each other or something like that. Like, people can disagree and be like, this is how I viewpoint, and this is my viewpoint, and blah, 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 and this is my viewpoint, blah, blah. And then the listener, the viewer, whatever, then they decide, huh, I kind of agree with this. Or the best thing is I'm going to go do research on my own, and I'm going to form my own opinion and then kind of decide. So, yeah, it's I like when there's debate and you know, people learn stuff from it. That's kind of the whole idea, at least the way it used to be, you know?
Yeah, very much so. And I've never had that issue with like Dave or Brian or anybody from the Figure Four Weekly. But, and also, it like myself, my opinions about like what makes a wrestler Hall of Fame worthy might be a little different than Dave's or Brian's, you know. I'm very much, because I'm one of those historical guys where I do like to look at facts and figures and influence and things like that more so than say work rate, because in my opinion, also because I've been involved in wrestling for so long, I've always felt that work rate can be subjective, whereas somebody's ability to draw and their track record as a box office draw is not as subjective. So I've always leaned more towards if somebody's a box office draw, and that's just, you know, my opinion, right? So that's why I tend to choose guys like that over other guys.
So good segue into, you know, numbers and box office draws and things like that. Cause obviously, you know, that's partially what running an indie promotion is all about. Right. So Defy Wrestling, for those that for some reason have not heard of it, or maybe know a little bit about it and want to kind of learn more. So I had heard this promotion just, you know, through Buzz, through Brian had been talking about, but really it seems like since I want to say post pandemic that running shows again, right? So talk like early 2021, it seems to really have kicked up a notch. And this is my viewpoint from the very other side of the country. Right. And it just seems like more people are talking about it. I'm looking, there's more buzz about it. And just things have really, to me, and you can obviously tell me if I'm wrong or what have you, or something has changed, that really it's gone from being like a indie promotion in the Pacific Northwest to a really well-known promotion outside the Pacific Northwest, if that makes sense.
It does. It does. And some of that's been by design. You know, when you're a small independent promotion in the, you know, in the corner of the country, it's hard getting recognized on a national basis or worldwide basis or whatever. But there's positives and negatives to that too. You know, when you're in an area where you don't get overexposed, sometimes you could just do your own thing and not get involved with the wrestling politics and things like that. But it's also nice to be recognized as well. Since the pandemic has ended, and out here in Washington, our pandemic, as far as running live events, ended a lot later than most parts of the country. So, like, we didn't start running again until late August of 2021. And that's where we were able to have, like, a limited-sized crowds. And so that's when we started running again. And we'd have to, at that time when we first started running, we had to limit our attendance to 500. And so that kept us from, you know, some of our larger crowds that we've had in the area. So, you know, that hurt us for a little bit, but it was something that we knew going in.
Yeah. So to that point, your last show was February 2020. And I think most indie promoters at the time, ones I've talked to, was, you know, at that point, you know, the virus was kind of like known, but it wasn't as big as it obviously would be about a month later. So, you know, you're running your show Kings of Crash in Seattle. You have your Defy World title match. You have your usual, usual cast of characters, and everything is running good. And like you said, it took until August 27th, 2021, when you returned with Leviathan, two event weekend in Seattle. How so? I'm always fascinated about is how did you the promotion obviously has to go in ice as all indie promotions do. How'd you survive it?
It was rough. I'll you know, we'll be completely honest with you. It was rough go because even though you're not able to bring in revenue, you still have bills going out. You know, you still have taxes. You still have storage facilities. You know, there's other expenses involved that, you know, you have to continue paying those bills. We also, you know, when everything got abruptly canceled, we had, you know, thousands of dollars of deposits down, thousands of dollars worth of airline tickets out there. And a lot of those things weren't being returned right away. You know, airline tickets there, we had some international airline tickets that weren't returned to us for over a year. So that does hurt. You know, we had a lot of events planned when we went when the pandemic first started. We had some big international stars from Japan coming in, like Great Sasuke. We also had a big summer tour that we just put on sale, and we were working with Progress from the UK, and we were going to go up and down the West Coast with them. And all of those things had to get canceled, you know, and when it comes to international flights, things like that, it's really hard to get your money back from those things. So that was a challenge.
So then when you're starting to plan ahead, you know, as most any promoters are doing, you're trying to follow along with whatever your state guidelines are in terms of masks inside, amount of people inside, social distancing inside. Like I've heard these stories before, and it's a case of, as you were kind of alluding to before, you know, you're trying to put on the best show possible, but you're also having to weigh the budget, because part of the budget is tied into ticket sales. And if you can, there's all these limiting factors and things like that. So when did you, when did the planning go into that, that August, late August return weekend? And how did you kind of balance all these different factors to make it a Defy event? Cause I think that's a big thing too. When people, you had the name brand value there regionally, right? You want to put on a show that's worthy of Defy. How did you kind of balance all these factors going into it so you could accomplish all those things and kind of get back on the train again?
Yeah, well, we started in April of 2021 where we really started planning it. We had the dates in place. We reserved the buildings, but it wasn't even until about a month before that we were feeling confident that we were going to be able to complete the shows, just because there was so much, you know, variants being announced or numbers going up, and you never know. Like the building that we were running in, like, let's say the building decided at the last minute, well, numbers are going up in the area, so maybe we shouldn't hold events. There was always that concern even until days before the event. So it was kind of a crapshoot. There were some nervous nights there, and a lot of our talent, we use a lot of talent from British Columbia. And, you know, we were put in a position where we didn't have those wrestlers available to us as well because the borders were closed. So, it was challenging. It really was.
So, talk about, I guess, the region a little bit. In Seattle, you've done some shows. In Portland, you've done a few shows outside in Los Angeles and everything like that. For those that are not familiar, or maybe familiar just through, you know, the Brian and Vinny show and things like that. Tell us about kind of the region wrestling wise, because when I think of that area, I think of you. I think of Jim Valley and his never ending, or actually the conquest to get Don Owen in the Observer Hall of Fame, which happened this year, and or last year rather. And I think of like Portland wrestling and that kind of that long running TV show institution that was there. But kind of talk a little bit about the Pacific Northwest as a wrestling hub and kind of how it's evolved, even, you know, prior to the pandemic and kind of where it's at today in 2022.
Yeah, you know, it's strange because when Don Owen went out of business in 1991, Sandy Barr, you know, father of Art Barr and Jesse Barr, he kind of took the reins and started running the territory. But he had a lot of problems with our state commissions, both here in Washington and Oregon. And so while he had weekly television for a long time, some of his promotional tactics and things like that were iffy, and so the events that he would run were spotty. We always had like an independent scene here, but there was no one running in the area that was doing that had really branded themselves as a company, branded themselves as a, you know, as a brand. And most of the independent promotions were just kind of like, you know, rent a high school gym, mm-hmm. throw in a ring and bring in some wrestlers. Mm-hmm. And that's pretty much all it was. You know, there was no thought process into what they wanted to do or what they wanted to become. And then it seemed like every promotion that started in Portland would try to call themselves the new Portland wrestling or bring back wrestling to the old days, which we know that never works, but everybody tried it. And so for about a 20 year run there, that's what we had. You know, we just had promoters that were like trying to bring back the magic of Don Owen. But it just wasn't going to work. And unfortunately, because of the location of Seattle or Portland, we're so far removed from the rest of the country that whenever a promotion would start building up some momentum, it was never publicized nationally. Some of that was by design, of course, but some of that also was just because the people that were in charge of running those promotions weren't equipped to promote properly. Yeah. And so, you know, in about a little over 5 years ago, the Defy was something that we had envisioned on doing. And, Jim, my partner, he had a vision for Defy. And when we sat down and met for the first time, it was weird because our visions aligned greatly. You know, we felt that, wrestling in the Northwest needed to be modernized. We weren't getting a lot of fly-in talent. There was a lot of talent out here that was good, but no one had exposure. We weren't seeing a lot of talent from outside of the geographical area. And so we started bringing in some new talent, and we started marketing to a different fan base as well. We weren't marketing towards the old Portland wrestling fan base. We were trying to get new fans and introduce some of these new fans to pro wrestling. And that's what we did. That's one of the things that we're most proud of, is all these fans that are in the Northwest now that are fans of indie wrestling. We helped introduce them to attending live matches.
So going back to this, so your first event, January 13th, 2007, Defy One Legacy, or Defy Legacy rather, very first event. So I was looking over this card earlier today, because I'm always fascinated by like where promotion kind of starts and where they have ended up or where they are currently, because so many things change between that, you know, pandemic aside, right? Booking philosophy changes, people behind the scene changes, philosophy changes, you know, I mean, the indies from when you started in 2017 now, there was no such thing as AEW, right? And and all of a sudden, just the industry has just changed light years since you started. So your main event was for the GFW Next Gen title, Cody Rhodes against Shane Strickland, who everyone knows Swerve Strickland now. It was since then was signed by WWE, got released by WWE, and then is now in AEW and on Rampage Friday night's going to be competing for the FTW title against Ricky Starks. Just weird how life just kind of works like that. But at that point, you know, he wasn't a he wasn't a known, he was a known talent on the indies, but he was not as well known, obviously, as he would be in the years after. So that was, I mean, again, the GFW Next Gen title. You didn't have a title yet. Jeff Cobb was on the card. But, you know, looking over this card, you had Matt Cross, but it wasn't like a, you know, it wasn't like a who's who of indie names. Like you may see other promoters maybe bring in the first time out, like, oh, we got to go up and down the stack and just blow it out. It was a mix. And you look, you had like a Loser Leaves Town match. You had a four way. It was kind of a little mix of everything. What was your kind of your mentioned kind of that combining of philosophies and what you guys were setting up? What kind of like, did it, that first show happens, were you kind of like, all right, we need to make some adjustments, or was it kind of like, this is the path forward and we're just going to kind of see how we evolve and tweak and go from there?
Well, one of the things we wanted to do is we wanted to establish some local wrestlers.
Yeah.
And the problem was, is that there were no established local wrestlers, as far as there were some talented wrestlers in the Northwest. They just didn't have much exposure internationally or nationally. Even locally, a lot of the guys, they may have been known to a small, you know, a small group of an indie promotion or something like that, but they weren't known locally as wrestlers. So we wanted to handpick some of the better local wrestlers at the time. Unfortunately, at the time when we first started, there was a very strict athletic commission in Washington and Oregon. And so the number of wrestlers that were actually licensed at the time was very limited. A lot of Canadian wrestlers that we wanted to lean on, they weren't licensed as well, and licensing was very expensive. And so over the course of the first, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 shows, we started helping these guys get licensed. We started working with a licensing board to change some of those rules to make it easier for independent promotions to run, and that we succeeded on both levels. We were able to use more talent from around the Northwest and expose them. And at the same time, we were able to like decrease some of the fees and stipulations involved with running local shows. So it was a lot of work that first year. One of the things too is that we had a lot of our local talent, they didn't have a lot of exposure when it came to working with national talent. And we had some good talent, we had some good wrestlers, but they had never been pushed to a level of working with, say, like a Jeff Cobb or a Davey Richards or you know, another international star at the time, like a Matt Cross. And it takes time sometimes to rise to that level. And so it took us a while to really establish a local crew of wrestlers. And now some of those guys are just doing fantastic. You know, on our second show, we had like Darby Allin, for instance, and he was just starting to break out nationally on the indie scene, you know, and we started matching him up against some of the local wrestlers and some of the international wrestlers. And he really started shining, you know, same with Jeff Cobb to an extent. And Shane Strickland, who was working a lot of places, but we were using them every single month and putting them up against like excellent talent, you know, and that really helped him develop his game too.
In the, in that first year, was there ever a specific point or a specific, event or something where you're like, I think we really got something here, and this is like a real thing? Cause you know, it's like, Everyone that's ever worked for like a startup, there's always this thing of, is this going to work? Is this going to work? Is this going to work? And especially because you're relying, the X factor is the fans, because you can think you have the greatest creative in the world, but if all of a sudden fans are like shitting on it, just don't get it, and whatever, it's, then you're kind of like, oh, okay, now what, right? What moment? What was the, I guess the aha moment, as they say in startup culture?
This will sound weird, but to be honest, it was our first show where we saw the crowd react to the wrestlers, the in-ring product, and just the presentation. Because prior to Defy, most indie promotions would slap a ring down in the middle of a community center or something like that. No production qualities, no theme, no feel, like nothing special. It would just be a gymnasium with the lights turned completely on, nothing special about it, and very generic feeling. And our first show was not like that. We changed it. We changed the game locally and presented something that the fans really got behind. And the crowd reactions of that first show, if you go back and even watch like Shane Strickland versus Cody Rhodes, the crowd was really behind it. But one of the moments that really stands out to me as far as changing the game in Seattle for us was our second event where we had Shane Strickland wrestle Leo Rush. These two guys, you know, they came in and they tore the house down. They had just a tremendous match. It's available on YouTube. I think it's from April of 2017.
Yep.
And it was just so many people in the building, and you could even ask Craig this because he was there that night, and I believe Vinny was too. They both said it was, and these are guys that have been to wrestling shows all over the country. Excuse me. They were like, that was one of the greatest live matches I've ever seen. And from that moment on, we were always chasing that, and we were obtaining that. We were hitting those marks where we were presenting something that fans locally had never seen and really building on that momentum that those guys started. And from there, you really felt like there was something special. By, say, our fourth or fifth event, we knew that we really had something special because the fans were there. We knew who those loyal fans were that were going to be there every month. And, you know, here we are 5 years later, and so many of those fans are still there in the same seats even a lot of times. And yeah, it's just been amazing.
So fast forward to, I guess we'll go like your last event, which just happened just a couple weeks ago as we record this on March 12th. You look at kind of how far you've come, same venue, Washington Hall, and you look up and down the card, and I notice, you know, a lot more names that I remember, or that I know, rather. You have Christopher Daniels, yeah, obviously, Wheeler Yuta, Eddie Kingston, Big Damo, Filthy Tom Lawler. Everyone knows him, right? The Bollywood Boys.
Yeah.
Even guys like, you know, Joseph Samael, Ricky Gibson, Levi Cooper, a lot of these guys. And even, you know, you go back to other events as well. Titus Alexander, Swerve was back. That was a big match when he took on Nick Wayne. And that whole moment, even the show before that, Jonah. I mean, so I'm always curious about, you know, with indie shows, you were talking about the local talent and kind of trying to mix in that with also some draws from the outside and to try to kind of make a nice recipe of a show, right? And that can be tough,
yeah,
too, because depending where you're flying guys in from or how they're traveling, your budget goes up and you're trying to always, like I mentioned, that it's always the balance, right? So how has,
yeah,
that kind of changed from, obviously, you know, your very first event and kind of as it come through to say like the last year, post-pandemic? Has it been more of a shift to bring in more named talent? Has more named talent been made available to you, shown interest? How has that kind of come together?
A little bit of both. One of the things that really hurt us during the pandemic is losing access to a lot of Canadian wrestlers.
Mm.
Because during that time, there were a few guys like the Weirdo Hero, Randy Myers, or Artemis Spencer. Those guys, or even some of the younger guys like Judas Icarus or Travis Williams, those guys had really shown their worth in Defy and had built themselves to a position where fans saw them as equals to any international stars. A guy like Randy Meyer, who is our champion, you know, we had fans that were as willing to buy tickets to see him as they would be to see anybody that we flew in. And they treated him like a star, you know, on equal footing. And so losing a few of those guys hurt. But we also replaced them with guys like, and I don't mean replace them, but
yeah,
they were able to slide into those spots. Guys like Cody Chun, Nick Wayne, Guillermo, Midnight Heat. Those guys have really risen, and especially during the pandemic, those guys have really like stepped up their game. And they're in a place now where fans see them on the same level as guys that we fly in. So if we put Cody Chun in the ring with a guy like a Jeff Cobb or, you know, I'm some of the dozens of different stars that we've had him wrestle. Fans are supporting him just as much as anybody else. Same with Midnight Heat or Nick Wayne, you know. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that we set out to do from the get-go. It was one of the things that sometimes people would criticize us for. They would say, well, why are you having this wrestler lose to this guy? Or why are you having this guy wrestle this guy? But it was part of a plan to build some of the local talent up to where fans saw them as equals to international wrestlers.
Yeah. I think it's one of the, having talked to any promoters before, and you kind of get to learn all this stuff. Cause yeah. So you have a lot of assumptions as a fan, like, oh, why is this happening? Why is this happening? But you know, with names, we'll say, yeah, name, like national names. Right. So, you know, say wrestler X, you have planned for a big 3-month program, and all of a sudden, AEW calls and their date is booked up for what you're going to plan for parts 2 and 3 of that 3-month program, right? Or all of a sudden they blow their knee out or something happens. If you rely too much on the outside, so to speak, then you really set yourself up for you're walking on thin ice, because you have to rely on local talent in case something happens, or you have to rely on people that are you can really kind of depend on no matter what. And it's not just kind of a stop on the road, so to speak. So yeah, it's a balancing act in how you do that. And you guys seem to be doing obviously really well.
It is a balancing act. And I'll tell you this, pre-pandemic, when AEW first started, that was a real issue with not only ourselves, but a lot of independent promotions across the country.
Yep.
You know, you'd have like a rough draft of where you saw yourself as a promotion, say 12 months from now, you would kind of have a booking idea laid out on paper for 6 months, 12 months from now. But like when AEW started, all of a sudden, all this talent that you've relied on or that you're planning to rely on, they're no longer available on those dates, or you just can't rely on them because you don't know if they're going to be pulled off that date. So that was a huge adjustment, and that's still an adjustment going on today. You know, even with local talent, there's guys that we have that have been picked up by AEW where it's like, well, they have to choose AEW first, and we understand that, but we want to have access to them when AEW doesn't, you know. Mm-hmm. Guys like Shane Strickland or Brody King, you know, these guys who just started with AEW, those are guys that we have been very supportive of, and they've been supportive of us, and we've worked really well with those guys. And we would love to use them, you know, every month or every other month, but it might be a situation where we just can't because they have commitments now elsewhere. Mm-hmm. So those are always things that you have to like work around.
So I'm interested in accessibility to your product from the outside for people that can't go to shows. Also, before I forget, how many people can fit into Washington Hall? What's the capacity there for a show?
Well, the capacity changes. There's a couple different ways we could set up the building. Mm-hmm. So capacity can change from 500 to 800. Oh. So we've had numerous sellouts there where we've had complete, like where we've used the way we set it up to hold 800 people, where we've had a complete sellouts with that number, and we've had numerous sellouts at the 500 as well. So yeah, most of our events come close to capacity. We could switch it around really quick. But yeah, any good building you can kind of configure to have different capacities.
And it's mostly, is it mostly repeat customers, so to speak, or do you have, you know, newbies kind of coming, you know, shows?
One of the greatest things is when we see fans that are like, this is our first time coming, you know, that's always great. We do have a lot of loyal fans. I would say probably about 2/3 of our fans come to every single show. Mm-hmm. You know, and then you have guys that will, you know, you have people that will come to one show here and then they'll miss a month and then come back. You know, it just depends. You know, we're in downtown Seattle, so that's always a challenge because your competition varies from a Kraken game to you know, Pearl Jam, you know, so you never know.
Yeah, it's I'm always it's always funny. Like, so my local indie I was telling you about before, Limitless, it was it's about an hour away from where I live. So I go to almost, they do one show a month, and I go to pretty much like 80% of them, give or take. And it's funny to see like the you know, the dad that's just taking the two boys to a wrestling show, and he has no idea what Limitless is all about. And they sometimes tend to be maybe a little bit more adult language than you'd see in a WWE show or something like that, you know? And you just kind of like, you just kind of wonder, again, we talk about balancing acts. It's how did they first, I'm always interested, how did they first hear about it? What determined, what brought them in? Was it just wrestling on a marquee or what have you? And then, you know, when it's more adult, kind of like, how do they manage that and all that? I'm always kind of fascinated by that, you know?
Oh yeah, definitely. I love seeing like fans that it's their first time coming, and to ask them what they liked the best or what they didn't like, or just kind of gauge what their feelings are on the show, you know, because it's always good to see what to do, maybe things you could tweak or whatever to make things better for the casual fans.
So I was talking about the outside. So you have a YouTube channel, obviously, as most promotions do, but I was curious about your decision to do your own on-demand service where people can access full shows versus like an IWTV or a High Spots or something like that. Take me through that kind of thought process and accessibility and kind of, basically that whole thought process, how you came to it.
Well, one of the things with Defy is that we were very aware of our production and our production values on our shows. And one of the things that made Defy stand out from a lot of other promotions was our production values for our events. And for a long time, it required us to produce those in post. And so doing a live event was a little more challenging. We are working on a couple different things, and we're going to probably be announcing soon where we will be streaming some of these events live. Up until now, most of our events have not been streamed live. So, and they're just now available on Defy on Demand. But here in the near future, we're going to be announcing our live streaming.
And yeah, so with the accessibility, so why go with your own on-demand service versus going through one that, you know, like an IWTV or something like that, where you might get a little bit less of a cut of revenue, but you may get more people watching it?
It wasn't about the revenue, because there wasn't a whole lot there. We are very protective of the brand and the quality that we produce. And that was always something that we were worried about doing. We've experimented with some of the other streaming services before, and we didn't feel, you know, they didn't fit what we were looking for at the time. So we decided just to do it ourselves.
Makes sense. Well, we can't have any Defy conversation without talking about Nick Wayne. And really a breakout is, you know, doesn't he break guy fill the word, right? So this, how did he first kind of come? It came, obviously, the Buddy Wayne, you know, that I'm sure that's how he kind of came into your orbit. But how did he kind of come into, all right, he's going to go from a kid that's learning how to wrestle to we're going to put him on Defy shows to where he is now, where he's taking on some of the biggest people from the outside and having banger matches that people like all over the world that wrestling fans are watching on YouTube and are like, holy shit, what are we seeing here? To him getting signed to an AEW contract on a Defy show presented by Darby Allin in a whole kind of like full, everything comes full circle thing. It's crazy.
Yeah. You know, it is really crazy to think about it that way, but my relationship with Nick goes back to like before he was born. Like I mean, one of the guys who helped me on wrestling the most was Nick's grandfather, or, you know, was Ed Moretti, you know, who is like his grandfather. So, I mean, I've had a relationship with Ed Moretti for years. Nick's mom, I've known her for, 25 years, maybe more. Yeah, probably 25 years now. I've known Buddy for 30 years. And so I've known there's his whole family, and I've been friends with Buddy. I've traveled the road with Buddy for years, and I've been friends with Nick's wife for 25 years. So it's just one of those things where it just, I've known Nick since he was a little kid, you know, a little baby. I think the first time I met him when he was like 9 months old. So, it's something, you know, so I've known him forever. I've known his progress, where he's started at, where he's come from. And I've been exposed to him, you know, our events in Seattle are 21 and over, or up until just recently, they were 21 and over. Now they're 16 and over. And that has nothing to do with Nick Wayne, by the way. But, for the longest time, I would allow Nick and his mom to sneak into the back and hang out behind the curtain when Nick was 11 years old, 12 years old. So he was seeing guys like Shane Strickland and, a lot of these wrestlers every month at Defy from behind the curtain. And he was building a relationship with them. And that was something that I kind of did just because I had a feeling that Nick was going to choose wrestling as his path. Hmm. And I wanted him to be exposed to some of these people. And I wanted him to work alongside me. I'd have him run little errands or something. Hey, can you go grab so-and-so? There are segments coming up next side. So I'd send Nick away into the locker room to grab, you know, a wrestler because they had to, their match was coming up or something like that. And from time to time, I would just share tidbits of information with him. And he was always just a sponge for material. And you could talk to guys like Strickland or Darby or whoever. And that's the way he's been. He's been the sponge of information. Not to mention, you know, being the son and grandson of two guys who know this business as well as anybody. It was just one of those feelings. We didn't want him to wrestle at Defy when he was much younger. But during the pandemic, he had like this big growth spurt, mm-hmm. where he no longer looked like a little kid, you know? So he had this growth spurt. And then once the pandemic hit, I was like, well, geez, now we got to use him because he's now 6 feet tall, you know? Before the pandemic, he was still like, I don't know, 110 pounds and a little kid, you know, but mm-hmm. a year and a half later, he's got his mom's height and he's, you know, 6'1" or something like that. So
yeah,
I thought now is the time to pull the trigger and have him wrestle for us.
And that presents you with another interesting challenge, because obviously with him getting, it's great because you have a local guy that we've talked about, the local guy all throughout this thing, right? Local talent, how important that is. But he's obviously getting national attention, the AEW deal. Yeah. I want to ask you about that in a second. So some promoters might just say, screw it, put the strap on him and let's go, right? But there's others, yeah. who I like yourself in your team is taking the approach of let's push him, but let's not like give everything over to him, so to speak. Let's kind of like work him in and do it the right way. And I mean, so far it's worked. He's been in there with top guys before, but he's also had other matches coming along. And yeah, it's an interesting challenge, because there's a rocket you have here, but you also don't want to like have it flame out too soon. You know what I mean?
Yeah, very much. And you know, that's part of the art of booking, right? Mm-hmm. There's something to be said for the underdog, and Nick's the definition of an underdog. You know, he's a 16-year-old kid wrestling adults. You know, why do you want to screw that up? You know, look at Rey Mysterio's career, for instance. You could say, well, maybe he should have had a longer run with the title or whatever, but Rey Mysterio was always an underdog because he was 5'2", right? And smaller than everybody. And everything Rey did in the ring, every single thing Rey did in the ring was a response to an action of somebody else. So he was always fighting from underneath. And that's what made Rey so great. Another thing that makes Darby so great, he's got that same thing that Rey has. It's psychology, you know, and a lot of promoters or bookers or whatever, they don't have that imagination. They just want to have that payoff right away, you know. And sometimes the best payoffs are those long drawn out payoffs. And as a fan of wrestling, I like to see that. And I think a lot of fans still like to see that as well.
Yeah, I'd agree. So take me behind the moment of when he got his AEW contract. Obviously, this was at the, was this at the 50th? No, it wasn't at the 50th anniversary show, but there was a...
It was at our 5th anniversary show.
5th anniversary, 50th. My God. Mm-hmm. I'm going back to Portland Wrestling. 50th anniversary. What am I talking about? So the 5th, talk to me about how this whole thing came together. Obviously, you were contacted at some point and you had to keep it a surprise. But of course, you know, with indie wrestling and in any wrestling, it's tough to keep surprises. But you're able to kind of keep it under wraps. Talk to me about how that all came about.
It is. And it's funny, if you talk to anybody that deals with us as bookers or promoters or whatever, we tend to keep everything tight-lipped. We don't necessarily like to share everything with everybody anyways, because that's how I was brought up in wrestling, you know. Mm-hmm. You didn't share finishes of other people's matches with everybody on the roster. It was just something you didn't do back in the day, you know. And so I like to have a little bit of that surprise and intrigue, and I like to have that. I still believe that the best wrestling is when there's a lot of improv to it, right? And so Nick had no clue what was going on. He didn't know that Darby was there. He knew that Shane was there, but he didn't know what Shane was doing. And nobody except myself, my partners, and Darby and Tony Khan and Chris Daniels knew that Darby was even in town. So it was very tight-lipped, and Daniels didn't even find out until that day. So it was a very big secret. As far as Darby, as far as the AEW contract, that was something I'd been talking with Darby about for months. And it's crazy, but I knew about the potential of Nick getting that contract way back in November. So it was something that we were kind of quietly working on behind the scenes. And that was all spearheaded by Darby himself, because Darby and Nick, you know, they've got a pretty special relationship. They're almost like brothers, and they're very close. And so you could see it in the ring that night when Darby's music hit. Daniels had to kind of tell Nick, you know, to kind of stay in the ring. But you could see as soon as Darby's music hit, it hit him, it hit Nick, and he was surprised and shocked, you know. So it made for a really interesting moment.
So when you said you guys were working on it with AEW, so was the goal to get him under some sort of contract before maybe another company showed some interest in getting him under contract? What was kind of the impetus there? Because obviously he's still 16, yeah, to finish school, right?
Yeah. And there was no rush to get him under contract because of another promotion. I don't think he had interest in any other promotion because he's on a huge run right now on the indie scene. And so he wasn't even thinking about signing with a major promotion yet. But there had been talks about Tony being interested in him, and Tony had watched videos and of his matches and things like that, and was very aware of Nick and realized the potential. And it was just one of those rare occasions where there's like, help, this kid's got so much potential. I want to work with him. And so that's why they put him under contract. Nothing more than it's a somewhat of a developmental type contract, you know? Mm-hmm. So, and that's what it was. It was just because he had so much support and Tony really saw something in him, which everybody else has seen it too. So it was just one of those deals where they felt that when he turns 18, it'd be great to have him under contract so we could really see what he could do. Mm,
good stuff. So we'll wrap up with this. And I mentioned Portland, Oregon at the top, because what's been in my head about Defying Portland is Saturday in Portland, Oregon. You return there for the first time since October 2021. And obviously, you run a different big city. How is it? is the crowd? Obviously, I'm sure you have some fans that do travel, even though, you know, it's not like 10 minutes apart or anything like that. But do you have a, what do you notice are the differences between running in Seattle and Portland?
The crowds are different. Yeah. They're different crowds. I don't know how to explain the difference between them. I think maybe like our crowds in Seattle, they would be more similar to going to like a indie rock band, like a indie rock show would be like more like our Seattle crowds. Our Portland crowds would be more like going to say like a, like a heavy metal band that's had like some radio play.
Got it.
You know, so they're very similar, but a little different. Both great crowds. And we've been sporadically going to Portland. This will only be our second time going to Portland since the pandemic ended. When the pandemic ended, I mean, when it started, we had plans to run Portland almost every other month. And of course those plans changed because of the pandemic, but, Portland's always like a second home to us.
So that happens on Saturday. Obviously, if I believe tickets are still available, limited tickets, I would assume, as always. 16 plus show. Yep. Defy on Edge. Chris Daniels is going to be there. Joey Janela is going to be there. And, of course, I don't have the lineup right in front of me, but another good lineup coming up on Saturday, huh?
Yeah, very much. And speaking of Nick Wayne, he's going to be wrestling an even older opponent than Christopher Daniels when he faces off with Too Cold Scorpio.
Oh, Too Cold Scorpio. He's been all over the indie scene. I can't believe it. 90s are back, right? I love it.
Exactly. So we've got a guy, I believe Too Cold Scorpio's, what, 54?
Mm.
Don't quote me, but I believe that's what he is.
Sounds about right,
facing off against a guy who's 16. So
unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. It'll be interesting. Well, that comes up, and obviously I should mention you just announced or was recently announced that John Moxley is making his way back to the Pacific Northwest coming up in, is it April or past that? Are we not sure yet?
It's April 30th. Yes, he's going to be facing a guy you know very well, Tom Lawler.
Mm. I was just watching the clip earlier today of him calling out, running down the fan, this guy, Tom Lawler, running down these poor fans in Seattle for their NBA team, your NBA team, leaving.
Yeah. They haven't been here in 15 years.
Yeah,
Come on, Tom.
Cheap heat Lawler. And then, he calls out John Moxley. So, yeah, John Moxley is going to be returning. So, yeah, you got some big things ahead. I'll leave with this. So for fans that are like, all right, I need to check out some Defy stuff. Where would you send them to first? YouTube or what have you? And then obviously, what should they check out first? Yeah.
You know what's everyone's raving about, and it's been a couple weeks that it's been released, but everybody keeps talking about is, and it's free on YouTube, so check it out. This is a great way to get introduced to Defy. But go check out Nick Wayne versus Shane Strickland or Swerve. They wrestled, last month. Just a fantastic match, and it's filled with drama. So check that out, and then go to Defy On Demand and check out our other matches. We have everything up there.
That's right. And, yeah, you can check out Defy, obviously, on Facebook, Twitter, Defy NW on there, DefyWrestling.com. Obviously, you can go there for DefyWrestling.com for ticket information, and then Defy On Demand. You can find that there. Start a free trial, actually, so you can check some stuff out there. And also on YouTube and all that good stuff as well. The year ahead is that just going to keep right. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure a lot of stuff, you had a lot of plans, a lot of things in your head. So stay in the Pacific Northwest. Any big plans to go outside or anything you can reveal at this point? Big plans?
We've got a lot of plans coming up. We're not going to reveal it yet. We do have some dates outside of the state area too, as well, coming up. So we're working on quite a few really big things. So,
great.
That'll see us go international.
Excellent.
So that'll be interesting.
Well, Matt, congratulations on making it through the pandemic. Knock on wood. Obviously, parts of it still exist, but in terms of from a promoter standpoint, and again, having talked to so many, there are some that just couldn't make it through financially. And congrats to you guys for sticking it out and making it through it and coming out on the other side and not only putting on shows, but putting on shows that are, like I mentioned at the top, buzzworthy, people are talking about, and people are going to be talking about a lot with returning stars, brand new stars being developed and things like that. I think you guys have a, you don't need me to tell you, have a good thing going up there, but you definitely do. And I'm so glad you got a chance to, we got a chance to talk about it. And hopefully get a chance to talk more about Defy in the future. Matt Farmer, thanks so much for stopping by Josh Nason's Punch Up. All right. Big thanks to Matt Farmer for stopping by. I almost said big thanks to Jim Valley for stopping by. I was thinking about Jim Valley. I should have mentioned more during the show. He does the backstage interviewing for Defy. So yeah, he's been doing some good stuff there. I'm sure he'll be in the house hopefully this weekend when, again, Defy heads to the Pacific Northwest. And there were two things I actually did not mention on the show about Defy, in case you're interested. They have a Patreon. So it's patreon.com Defiance, Defy with a Y, Defiance. And yeah, they have a $5 a month level, and you can listen to a Patreon only podcast, AMAs, you have your breaking news, they have a Discord. I think you get access to VIP tickets early, those type of things. But yeah, they have an interesting revenue stream there, as well as, what was the other thing I was going to bring? Oh, Pluto. Yeah, so if you guys have Pluto TV, which pretty much everyone has access to, easily able to get your smart TV, it's a free service. They do a lot of different stuff. Promotion that I do a podcast for, Limitless Wrestling, they have a channel on Pluto. And Defy has a channel on Pluto, and it's absolutely free. So you can go check out some stuff. I'm going to go watch some stuff on there and get more acclimated to Defy. And yeah, it's pretty cool stuff what they're doing up there. So yeah, you can check them out on Pluto. You can check them out, obviously, on YouTube and get some samples there. And of course, yeah, if you're up in the Pacific Northwest, check them out. And yeah, they could be coming, who knows, could be doing some live events soon. As Matt mentioned, maybe, you know, experiment with live streaming. I think that'd be kind of cool. So yeah, I guess we'll see what happens with Defy in the year ahead. But you know, with the last 5 years or any indication, they're going to be here for quite some time and making some noise. So good on them. And yeah, interesting to see what happens with young Nick Wayne here in the future too. So with all that being said, if you are interested in the aforementioned Limitless Wrestling, I should mention again, I do a podcast. They're having a show on Saturday night as well in Yarmouth, Maine. So the exact opposite side of the country. And you're in New England, check them out. Speedball, Mike Bailey, Jonah is going to be there. Who else is on the show? Veda Scott's going to be doing some commentary. JD Drake versus Anthony Green versus Rip Bison is one of the main events there as well. Brian Keith, a wrestler from Texas, getting some buzz. He's going to be on the show. So yeah, if you're in the Northeast, you know, there's a lot of great promotions, but check out Limitless Wrestling in Maine. And they're on IWTV, ton of matches on YouTube as well. And not sound like a, you know, plugging them all, but yeah, I should, because I enjoy their stuff. And I think you might as well. So if you happen to need some more indie wrestling in your life, check them out either in person or also check them out the various platforms I mentioned a minute ago. With all that being said, I'm going to bid you adieu. So for Matt Farmer, big thanks to him. Big thanks to all you for listening. You have a lot of choices in your podcast day. So I greatly appreciate the time you spend with me or any of the fine podcast hosts here at WrestlingObserver.com, even the aforementioned Brian Alvarez. Until next time. Insert catchphrase here.